Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What is up, guys? Today's date is September 24th. It is a Monday. This is going to be a Dolphin-centered podcast. Of course, I am Steven Masso, and you are listening to Via the Source. Now, Dolphin fans, the Dolphins are 3-0, and I am absolutely ecstatic about this start. They are coming off of a win against the Oakland Raiders. It was a home game on Sunday. It was in the heat. I'm sure many of you are already aware or have seen articles about the design of the stadium, but a really cool thing was that it was built, apparently, in mind with the focus being that the sun would be constantly hitting the opposing team's bench during the game, and the Oakland Raiders were dressed in their black jerseys, so it was absolutely taking a toll on them throughout the game. And it could have very well played a part towards the end of it. The final score ended up being 28-20, so another win, 3-0. The Oakland Raiders fall to 0-3. So, a few things. What did I take away from this game? How did it look? And I always like to start the analysis of the game with who gets the game ball. And in this one, I don't think it gets any more clear than in this game. The game ball goes to Xavien Howard, who had a monster of a game. He only had one tackle, but he had two picks, three pass deflections. And remember last episode, I said we win this game if we shut down Amari Cooper. That's the Raiders' number one receiver. If you shut him down, it's a wrap. Well, guess what? Amari Cooper finished the game, two catches, 17 yards, and Xavien Howard was on him all game. And that is just going to show you what kind of impact it has when you eliminate the number one downfield threat of a team. So a big round of applause to Xavien Howard. His first pick came on of a kind of a miscommunication between Amari Cooper and Derek Carr. This ball was absolutely chucked down the field, like 50 yards. Amari Cooper stopped running for it, kind of looked like he was giving up on that play, as he did look the entire game, but he gave up on that play. Xavien Howard stayed with it and just tracked down the ball. It ended up looking like a punt thrown with your arm, kind of. The second pick came at a very clutch moment. Derek Carr was aiming for the corner of the end zone. Xavien Howard completely had his receiver blanketed. I don't think even the best of throws could have got this one to his receiver on that one. Xavien Howard had the receiver completely blanketed. Any way you look at it, any way you pass it, it just didn't look like there was any chance for the receiver to get it just because it was such good coverage by Xavien Howard. And this was another game where I think the defense had another very solid outing. It didn't look so at the beginning of the game. And it was mostly because of Jordy Nelson, a guy that I said the team shouldn't have to worry about too much. So I was a little shocked to see Jordy Nelson having such a big role, at least at the beginning of the game. It was kind of shocking. He finished the game with over 170 yards receiving, but he had 139 yards in the first quarter. He hadn't had over 130 yards since 2016. Now, I think Jordy Nelson is an awesome player. I was a big fan of him when he was in his prime with Green Bay. I would always pick him for fantasy. I thought he was way more talented than people gave him credit for, especially when he was first coming up with Aaron Rodgers. Then it became kind of known that he was elite. But in this game, it was kind of more of a product of not him doing anything spectacular. It was more so the defense falling apart on a few plays. There was a big 70-yard reception at the beginning of the game. Minka Fitzpatrick was kind of the last line. He went for a risky tackle opportunity. He missed it. It turned into a huge play. They were able to track him down just shy of the end zone. And then later on, he would find the end zone, kind of some missed zone coverage. It appeared that Kiko Alonso kind of bit on a move that kept him underneath. Jordy Nelson went over to the top, was wide open. No one was even close to him. Easy catch, and that was Jordy Nelson's day. So, no, I don't think Jordy Nelson is a guy who was absolutely dominating. He had a few big plays that were just a result of the defense falling apart or missing an assignment on those plays. As for the running game for Oakland, they had a respectable running game. Marshawn wasn't able to get things going. He had under 4 yards a carry, only 3.4. He finished with 64 yards. He got a crucial goal line touchdown. And then Doug Martin, who I was kind of surprised to see a bigger role, had 43 yards, and he was the more effective of the two back, getting 4.8 yards a carry. Jalen Richard wasn't really handed off the ball at all. He had a respectable role in the passing game, 59 yards receiving. Still a bit of a concern, I think, the Miami Dolphins linebackers being able to get a hold of these little shifty running backs. So he's one of those type of guys that Miami needs to figure out a way to lock up. One knock I will have on the Miami defense, because I think they're playing spectacular, but one knock that just it's every single week is that their tackling is very poor, and it is mostly the linebackers and sometimes TJ McDonald and actually a little bit of Minkah Fitzpatrick in this one game particular where we just don't see a lot of wrapping up. For some reason, these guys just do not like to wrap up with their arms and they lead with their shoulders. So what you see a lot is the guy get bumped back for a yard and then just recovers and picks up another 5 yards after that. And I'm seeing that way too often. I would love to just see Kiko Alonso bury his, you know, head in the numbers of a guy, wrap him up and just twist him and take him down. Same thing with TJ McDonald. Guys like that, I would just love to see him stop using their shoulders and get some better tackling technique, more like Minkah Fitzpatrick. Now, I told you it was going to be kind of a high-scoring game just because I think the Oakland Raiders defense was very bad, and I was going to force the Oakland Raiders offense to need to compensate for that. So 345 yards by Derek Carr, 39 passes. He completed 27 of them, only had one touchdown, though. But when you switch over to Miami's side of the ball, it was kind of completely the opposite offensively. They were both, at the end of the game, high-scoring teams, but throughout the game, they look very different. The Raiders were dominating the time of possession. They had 38 minutes. Miami only had 21 of those minutes. And for Miami's side of the ball offensively, at the beginning, it was a little worrisome because there was a lack of creativity, it seemed like, offensively. It was kind of back to that vanilla offense that we had seen. So that was a little bit frustrating to see because I was wondering, are they going to make a push now? But it seemed like for a lot of the game, they were playing not to lose, which, again, a little frustrating to see. They had a total of 13 first downs. That's Miami. And the Raiders had 25 first downs. So that time of possession was very, very clear in this game. But I'm not saying that as a knock on the team. I was just saying that you could definitely tell one team had the ball a lot more. I think a lot of this was attributed to the fact that the running game for Miami was not there in this game. I would like to see the running game every single time just to kind of keep a balance, but the Oakland secondary is just so bad that you can pick on them throwing the ball, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to go one-sided if you recognize that there is a big weakness on the other side of the ball. So Miami, Frank Gore had 6 carries in this game, only 12 yards. Kenyon Drake had 5 carries, only 3 yards, and the leading rusher was once again Tanner Wheels, 3 carries for 26 yards. So there was not a lot of running game in this ball. In fact, Kenyon Drake in this whole game didn't really see much of anything. He had 2 catches, 7 yards in total. He was kind of invisible in this game. And then when you switch over to the passing side of the ball, you're going to look at Tannehill's stats and be like, whoa, this guy was a gunslinger. He was dotting up the Raiders defense. 289 yards, 17 out of 23, 3 touchdowns. And Tannehill was... he was very effective. It's kind of like the typical Tannehill game that we've been used to, that he's not going to blow you out of the water with stats or just completely... he's not going to be a Matt Stafford type of gunslinger, but he's going to be a very good game manager, very effective, and take what the defense gives him. And that's kind of the game he was having. He had a very, very nice throw to Kenny Stills, 34-yard pass that I think is worthy of being on a Tannehill highlight tape just because he threw it over the top so beautifully in a tight window. But his stats were a little bit skewed because 74 of those passing yards came on a tap pass to Albert Wilson. I'm not using this as a knock against him, but it's just, I know if people are going to look at the stats and be like, wow, Tannehill had 289 yards, 3 touchdowns. This guy is just ripping up the defenses. But that was basically a sweep pass, quote unquote, kind of sweep play to Albert Wilson. And then he had another one of those to Jakeem Grant that was an 18-yard tap pass yet again. So he had realistically probably 90 less yards than should be given to him and 2 less touchdowns, but he was playing his role effectively. I'm only bringing that up because I know people are going to look at this game and look at the stats and say, wow, Tannehill must have been the absolute dominant force in this offense. And I don't think in this game specifically, I wouldn't say that's what was happening. It didn't seem like he was the most dominant player offensively. If I had to give any credit to anyone for how the offense played, this is actually a game that I think the credit needs to go to Adam Gase, because the beginning of it had me worried. It was so vanilla, so conservative, so playing not to lose. But then when the time came, Adam Gase went to the bottom of that playbook and pulled out some amazing plays. One of them came on a little Philly special type of play. Albert Wilson was coming in motion along the side, tossed it back to him, and he ended up throwing a touchdown pass 52 yards to Jakeem Grant. That was Jakeem Grant's 2nd of the day, and Grant had himself quite a day, 70 yards receiving 2 touchdowns. Albert Wilson had himself an awesome day as well. He had 74 yards, a touchdown receiving, and then of course he had that 50-yard pass to Jakeem Grant. So that just kind of goes to show what I've been saying all offseason since the podcast first started. Jakeem Grant, he needs the ball in his hands. And Albert Wilson, they need the ball in their hands. These are guys that in open space, they're so dangerous. You can get very, very creative with these two guys because they're so shifty, they're so fast, they're so athletic that you can mess around with them. I said that Jakeem Grant needs to be used in a Darren Sproles-like way, but it seems like Albert Wilson is indeed being the guy that's getting used in a Darren Sproles-like way, and he has been very effective as a rusher. And Jakeem Grant is just a guy that if you get him the ball in open space, it's over. There is very little that you can do to stop a guy who is that fast, that shifty. And I just think these two guys need the ball in their hands as much as possible just because they're a deadly force. And then Kenny Stills had a very respectable day. He had that big reception, finished with 61 yards, and then that touchdown. And this game was also the return of Devontae Parker, who had missed the past 2 weeks with a broken finger. Well, he returned this game. He had a very, very clutch catch, a 36-yard reception where he did his usual Devontae Parker thing, where if you give him a one-on-one situation, he's just so big, so massive, and he is definitely a force in a one-on-one situation. Came down with the ball, 36-yard reception. That was the highlight of his day. If he could be incorporated into this offense, I do not know if there is a receiving corps in this league that is more full of depth, because you got Jakeem Grant now, who's making a name for himself. You have Albert Wilson, another guy making a name for himself. Amendola, very consistent. Kenny Stills, the definition of consistent. Devontae Parker, a guy with tremendous upside. And then you have a tight end who is so promising in Mike Gesicki. I just think that is about as deadly as you can get from a receiver standpoint, and there's so much speed on there that I think once these guys start getting more comfortable with each other and start learning the playbook more, we're going to see Gase reach into this playbook a little deeper, and we're going to see some more exciting kind of plays that we saw in this game. Now, the last point I'm going to be touching on is that William Hayes is out for the season. He tore his ACL, and it's really frustrating to hear how he got hurt. Gase addressed the issue, and apparently William Hayes went down with the ACL injury because he planted his leg and was actually trying to prevent himself from allowing his body weight to fall on the quarterback. Of course, that's a new penalty that is called every single week on Clay Matthews, that when you make a sack, your body weight falls on the quarterback, and it is, I guess, interpreted as too violent. It's called roughing the passer, and it's a 15-yard penalty. So apparently he was trying to prevent that from happening, planted his leg awkwardly. It's a very unnatural thing to do to prevent your own body weight, especially when these guys are so big, putting that much pressure on a limb with momentum, speed, and just your natural movement going downward, and to try to stop that. It's a very dangerous thing that the NFL is asking from these players to do. And I think there is no reason. This rule was made for one purpose, and it was made to prevent things, injuries like what happened to Aaron Rodgers from happening again. They're trying to protect their money guy. After we saw what happened to Tom Brady, the low hit on him, they made a rule that you cannot go low on a quarterback. And I agree with that rule. That one, it makes sense. Because a quarterback is a standing player, and basically any hit on your plant leg at that position is going to be a devastating injury to one of your like ligaments in your knee, almost a guarantee when you're at that position. But this one, it is strictly because of what happened with Aaron Rodgers. There are so many times people get hit with their body weight on a player because that's what basically the definition of what tackling is, and there's no injury to it. But then if you saw that hit that Burr had last season on Aaron Rodgers, there was a little something extra. He kind of pile-drived him into the ground. He lifted him up and slammed him into it. I think we could interpret the difference between that and what Clay Matthews is doing and what guys are doing on a regular basis. What Burr did to Aaron Rodgers should have been a penalty. And I think if there was a wording to say how to interpret that, if there's an excessive like slamming of their body, because that's definitely what it was, but just calling it every single time someone's body falls on the quarterback, that is a ridiculous penalty. And I hate to see a player get hurt trying to stop themselves from happening, because it is the natural movement of a tackle. That is how you make a tackle. You can't stop a moving guy who is up in the 300-pound area going full speed and then ask him to drag a quarterback down who is also giving himself up, so you're falling forward with him, and you want to like somehow throw yourself off of it. It's ridiculous. And I know they want to keep their money guys like Aaron Rodgers safe, they want to keep their MVPs healthy, but doing this to the game is very backwards, and they need to do something about it. It's very damaging to the image of the league, I think. And health is very important, and it's good that they want to look out for health. But to the point where they are ruining the game, I am not sure if this is the rule that should be in place. So, yeah, that's what I have to say about that. To go back to the game, just summarize everything. Xavien Howard, a top three cornerback, in my opinion, top five at the least consensus, probably, the way he is playing right now. The defensive line had another good game, three sacks, applied pressure very well. A shame to see William Hayes out for the year. Akeem Spence was also ejected. The linebacking core, still a little bit of a concern for me. They're able to play despite having some liabilities at the linebacker position, and Kiko Alonso seems to be doing better than I expect. Tannehill, another game, another very effective, a game that won't blow your mind, but he did very well, very respectable. There's no knock you can say on him. He did not really give you, the haters, anything to work with. He played his game. The stats are a little bit skewed in his favor, but it was still a respectable outing from him. The running game, unfortunately, in this game was completely shut out. Kenyon Drake, Frank Gore could get nothing going. This game, offensively, was all in the hands of Gase, Jakeem Grant, Albert Wilson. A very fun game to watch because of those three. So 3-0. Amazing. And as we continue moving forward, we are going to go up against the New England Patriots. That's going to be a very prime opportunity to really take this division. The Patriots don't seem to be clicking how they usually do. Tom Brady just seems a little out of it, a little indifferent. That's how we looked against the Lions, and they lost that game. So this is a prime position to really take this division by storm. People are knocking on the Miami Dolphins because they're 3-0 against teams that have a combined record of 2-7. So, of course, that's going to be used against him. And does that hold any weight? Of course it does. It has a little bit of weight to it. But one thing that you have to look at is, sure, maybe we weren't playing the best teams in the league. But if you look at the Patriots, they were playing the Lions, not a best team in the league. They lost that game. You look at the Vikings, that are regarded as one of the best teams. They played the Bills, who are probably the worst team in the league, and I think the majority of people would agree on that. And man, they got destroyed by the Bills. And then if you look at the Packers, and the Packers are losing games they should be winning. If you look at the Steelers tied with the Browns. That's a game that most people would say the Steelers should win. So yeah, maybe the Dolphins aren't beating the best teams in the league, but the fact is that whoever has been lined up against them, they take care of business, and that's what's been happening. They've been beating teams that they should beat, and there are very good teams in this league that are losing games that most people think they shouldn't be losing, and that is not what Miami is doing. So that's all I'll say. 3-0, things are looking great right now for the Miami Dolphins. I'll catch you guys later. Let me know what you guys think. Please leave comments, subscribe, like, share, all of that. I'm Steven Masso, and this was Via the Source.